This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. Online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Mr. Ira Weintraub on the other side, my guy Amazing Blue, and the MGo Blog Roundtable crew. Back as they are every single week to talk all things in the world of Amazing Blue. Fellas, how are you this morning? Brian Cook, obviously Seth Fisher and Craig Ross. You fellas doing all right?
Yes.
Doing fine. I was going to start with a really stupid story from when I was 9 years old about how I tried to reverse engineer APBA baseball, but I told the story.
I didn't know baseball existed in first
century.
Yeah,
it did. Yeah. And I told the story to my wife, and she said, not only is that story stupid, it's pointless. So I'm going to wait until I can sort of have some point to it, so it isn't completely inane. But I promise to bore people with this APBA baseball story. In any event, that's it.
All right. Well, way to go. So we're going to break this in segments. So I want you guys to take some time over the next 20 minutes to come up with because people were upset this morning. We were talking about on Dropping Dimes last night. We were talking about Juwan, and they're like, I don't want to hear that. There's a good chance he gets one more. I don't hear that. Okay, fine. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the real possibility that they do move on. If they do, who's your guy? Who's your Steve Prom this year? Don't answer now. I'm going to give you a 20-25 minutes to come up with who your Steve Prom is this year. Who would be your guy if you could pick? If you want to put a guy forward, who would that be? I have my guy who I want to talk about. I want you guys to have your guy who you talk about. But I want to start off first talking about this before and after moment in this trajectory here on the NIL front. That case, we knew it was going to be a pivotal case. We knew it was potentially going to be a death nail to the NCAA, but the ruling, the stay on the NIL rules and enforcement in the states of Tennessee and Virginia, which then led to NCAA President Charlie Baker pausing NIL enforcement nationwide, then opening the doors for legally now collectives to engage with prospective student athletes. My question to you fellas at this point, where now everything is on the table, you can do it all. Are you ready to do that? See, because me, I am. I know it makes some people skittish. I mentioned this to some folks. I had it as a topic yesterday. It's like, I don't know if I'm ready to do that. I don't know if I'm ready to have, you know, the collectives engaging with the top recruits, because the first guy I thought about, I said, man, I haven't seen Bryce Underwood sign on a dotted line anywhere. Why not revisit that? Why not? If you remember, I was having this conversation about the NIL money cannon mostly with JJ, but also with Bryce. He was who I first mentioned it about. And I was like, man, if it's on fire now, and obviously it didn't, but it's firing now. I feel like in the aftermath of the championship, in the aftermath of Sharon being the coach and the collectives really stepping forward to helping defend the roster, that there is a different sort of posture in the collective space with Michigan. So I ask you guys, are you ready? Is this a road that you are ready to travel. Are you ready to get down? And do you think Michigan is ready to get down? I want to start with you, Brian Cook.
Well, you know, I've been ready for many years. But I do want to draw a distinction between what A&M was doing and what I want Michigan to do.
Okay.
Right? Because A&M was just like, okay, we'll pay you guys a lot of money. And that's the only reason people showed up at A&M. And they didn't have a culture. And everybody's been at a job where they don't have a culture. And, you know, it's Don Draper yelling at, I forget her character's name, but this young woman who's like, this sucks. And Don Draper says, that's what the money is for. And I don't think that you can be a championship football program if you're running a that's what the money is for program. Now, Nick Saban just had a lot to say on this topic. And it feels like one of the reasons that he retired is that he was looking at his program and he didn't see the culture anymore. Because he said, like, we got to win with class, we got to lose with class. And I'm looking at this roster, and 80 to 90% of them are just thinking about how much money they can get next year. And I don't know if what I'm trying to do is resonating with them, because that's not who we are and what we're about. Now, that's maybe a little bit self-serving from Saban, but I think that was a really interesting comment. Because, yeah, I bet a dollar that Alabama was funneling guys under the table all the time.
You think?
But Nick Saban won 6 national titles.
Right.
Right. He wasn't running a that's what the money is for program. And I'm ready for Michigan's players to get paid whatever the market will support. But I think it's really notable that when Alabama lost their head coach, they got rated. And when mm-hmm. Michigan lost their head coach, they did not. So, yeah, I'm ready to pay the players, but I don't think that is the be-all and end-all of college football.
Craig Ross?
Yeah, I don't know how this works exactly. Well, first of all, if Michigan is just going to start paying, essentially, market rates, as Brian suggests, then I hope they got a good lawyer there making sure their players are filing tax returns. And my guess is they're self-employed. And so they need to be paying their self-employment tax. And because I don't see how you just take the money and not comply with the tax law. That's my first thought, such as it is. My second thought, am I ready? I'm not ready for cell phones. So I'm not sure that I'm ready for this. But, you know, and Brian's parsing is brilliant, I suspect. But it also... I'm not sure if it's possible. Once you say we're going to pay market rates for players, then it seems to me what the game is about is money. And I'm not sure you can walk the line saying we're going to pay market rates, but no, it's really about our culture.
I don't necessarily agree with that. What has Dan Campbell done with the Detroit Lions? Right? Like, that's a professional organization and they have a culture. Like, just because people are getting paid doesn't mean an organization have a culture, and that can be good or bad. Like, Boeing used to have a great culture, and then the finance people took over, and now their planes are dropping out of the sky. So just because people are amateur versus professional doesn't mean an organization doesn't have a culture.
Well, I guess I'm sorry.
I'm just saying, like, you know, I would work for MGO Blog for free, but...
I wouldn't say that,
but it's not like that's the only, you know, it's not like the money is the only thing that I cherish about this job, right? Like, there are lots of examples in the workplace of choosing your job based off of more than who's going to offer you the most, and there are lots of examples of people in the workplace who just go and take whatever the highest paying job is, right? No matter where it is, they don't care if it's close to family, they don't care if it's, some people are just out to get the most money and they're going to deal with the rest of it later, and that's fine. What Brian's saying is, let's not be that program. Let's be a program that says, here's what our values are, here's what we're doing, here's what we're affording, right? And if it was my money, I'd care more. But it's you know, we're talking about like some millionaire's money who's donating this because he wants the team to win, and the question is how much and whether we should. And I mean, it's not like it's a brave new world all of a sudden because we've got a, you know, because Charlie Baker said we're not enforcing this anymore. It's not like all of a sudden today there's conversations about how much you're going to make if you come to LSU like there wasn't a couple weeks ago, right? It's the only difference is whether Michigan is can do it because they don't want to break the rules, and Michigan for some reason gets in trouble when they break rules.
Yeah, so I'm sensitive to your I agree with that your point, Brian. I think there is a cautionary tale that is Texas A&M, right? Where and they were just hired guns, they were mercenaries. So and you don't want to. It's one of the reasons why I've been saying all along as we've been talking about, you know, NIL being more at the forefront and me trying to be an advocate for, hey, you know, Michigan needs to be more aggressive in this space, knowing that culturally it was going to be more gradual. They were never going to move as fast as I wanted them to move. I know that. But to kind of shine a light on this is what's going on elsewhere. And even if you don't do what A&M does, you're going to have to do more than what you're currently doing to compete. I feel like we are at a point where there is a great sense of urgency to really be proactive in the NIL space and recruiting. I don't think what is happening now is sustainable. There has to be some rules that come into place, not just at Michigan, elsewhere even. I heard Lane Kiffin, he said, yeah, I think this is terrible. We're using it, but I think it's terrible. Why? Because he knows none of these schools can continue to spend at the rate that they're spending now. Like what Michigan just did with its current roster, protecting the roster, that is not, and then you're going to go out and get recruits. It's not like you're going to be able to do that every single year. There's going to have to be some kind of contractual binding. There's going to have to be some sort of cap or that has to come about for the sport to sustain itself. But in the here and now, until we get there, this is a pivotal class for Sherrone Moore. Like this roster he has now is going to be, they're loaded on defense. They got some good pieces on offense, but all those guys go after this year. This class has got to hit. And because this class has got to hit, because I know it's not going to be something they're going to be able to do at a certain level all the time. You can't keep tapping the same donors all the time, but I'm going back to the well in this class, Brian, Seth, and Craig, saying, look, guys, I know I just asked you to help me protect this roster. I know there are needs elsewhere, but man, we got to crush this recruiting class. And if you can help me get just my five or six top guys, man, we got to get it done in this cycle. I think we got to be ready to be there if you're Michigan.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I think, though, that if there is some discernible set of rules where, you know, okay, I go to Michigan, this is what I get. Then I think it's possible for there to be a culture. I think it's very unlikely you're going to get a culture when it's just the Wild West. I think Texas A&M is inevitable. I think that's my thought is that if it's just, okay, it's a free market. We're giving $2 million to a quarterback and we're giving $50,000 to an offensive lineman or whatever it is. I think if that isn't within the rules, I mean, some sort of a defined mechanism or a defined structure, it's going to deteriorate quick and it's going to be A&M.
No, it's not. Because every single professional sports league has figured out a way with labor to control costs, because a lot of the cost goes into the will to win, not necessarily the will to put a product out on the field, right? So it doesn't function the same way that most markets do. As far as Michigan's concerned, I don't think that there's any reason to like turn into Texas A&M. I mean, you're going to get into those conversations, but like, let's say you take that. I just finished writing up the 2023 class because I normally do it over the summer, but my kid was sick, so I finished it up recently, and I was going over all the guys that we missed. Imagine Michigan right now if they had Bryce Young coming off a freshman season, right? Or sorry, not to Bryce, Dante Moore, I'm sorry, coming off a freshman season. If they had Aaron Gates ready to play nickelback for them. If they had Nick Harbor ready to be the big wide receiver for them, right? Those are
man,
guys.
Nick Harbor went to South Carolina.
He went to South Carolina because the track coach there. They have like an Olympic track coach there, and that helped them win that over Oregon, who was the school that if he went to Oregon, I'd say yeah. But Nick Harbor was certainly interested in Michigan. And, you know, and so was Aaron Gates, and so was, and Dante Moore grew up around here, but we couldn't even have a conversation with him because teams were like, hey, here's what you're going to get. Now, he wanted to start right away, but probably could have sold him on 1 year, get a ring. Yeah, and Matt Weiss, right? There are other issues there, but when you look at, and they lost Raylan Wilson, too, in this class, and, like, there was no conversation as soon as it started being about the money, and this is the class that in the middle of their cycle, NIL just, the doors flew open. And you got to see what happened, and what happened was Michigan was suddenly completely out of the conversation for guys that they usually could fight for. And if Michigan could put that top, those five stars back on top of a class that they get where they have people that they can develop, that's what this program could be.
Yeah, I'm really thinking, I admit that I'm thinking specifically of, and there are other guys, but I'm thinking specifically of Bryce Underwood. I mean, this is a guy right down the freaking street. He has formed a great relationship with your quarterback coach, right? This is I don't know that he's going to be everything that he's projected to be, but for it to be a homegrown guy, an in-state guy, a quarterback at that, man, I'm not letting that guy get away without a fight. Not for money. I'm not letting him get away without a fight. I understand what you're saying, Craig, but I'm relying on the culture of my program. And certainly I'm vetting this kid. I think if Michigan felt like he wasn't a good cultural fit, they would have self-selected out of that recruitment a while ago. But they took that to the hilt. And hell, I think they did a purposefully kind of maintain a good connection. Man, whatever happens, we want you to know you're here, because you never know what can happen in the transfer portal. My point is, now that the floodgates really are open, and it really is legal, and Michigan has shown the ability and the willingness to participate more aggressively in the NIL space, I'm saying, if you're, do it with that guy. Do it with that this is the quarterback that you could build everything. Or put it this way, I don't want to discount the other guys that are in the class or on the campus, but I want that guy in my competitive quarterback quotient with him being the best quarterback out of this state in the last two or three decades.
Well, I know nothing about that one, but what I do think is, look, Nick Saban is a very smart guy. And he's a thoughtful guy. You can't read his comments and think otherwise. And he doesn't think he can maintain a culture at Alabama, you know. And if he doesn't, under current rules, and if he doesn't think he can do it at Alabama, it's going to take a lot for Sharon and Ward Manuel to maintain a culture here, and still be in this free for all, laissez faire Wild West. And I hope that that's not true. And maybe I'm wrong, but I have a hard time seeing it enduring without something else happening than the status quo. In terms of Bryce Underwood, I don't know.
So you wouldn't be in the business of having your collectives engage with you just keep doing it the way they've been doing it.
No, I think they've probably got to. That's the fact. I just don't see it as a solution in even the midterm. I think in the midterm you're going to end up with Texas A&M light.
I think there's going to be some. There have to be some rules.
There have to be rules.
Yeah, even Lane Kiffin saying this isn't sustainable. I mean, hell, and Nick Saban of all people, to Brian's point, is saying, "Man, I got to get out of this sport. It's so bad." Some kind of order is going to come to this. Revenue sharing is going to come to this. But I think you got to anticipate that. Protecting you down the line. You got to compete in the here and now, and there's an opportunity in the here and now with a big time player in the here and now. And this class is crucial for Sharon Moore. This class is highly important for him.
I think short term, obviously, I don't think that there's any, I don't see any fear of Texas A&M, because those guys are going to go to Texas A&M. Michigan's not going to outpay guys to come here. They're going to focus on guys that, if you're going to lose a guy for the money, that shouldn't be a problem anymore. And that's right, like Sam says, you got to knock this one out of the park. So the other thing I would do is, if I was Michigan, or if Michigan had an athletic director who had some kind of vision, is I would start the players union here right now. because the schools have been getting in the way of that. I would say let's start it here. All of our guys are going to be part of it, and we're going to expand it to everybody else. We're going to make it fair, and we're going to have somebody sitting across the table. Because when you look at what these judges' decisions are, and when you look at what's stopping the NCAA from enforcing their rules, they're saying you can't have a system where there's nobody across the table. You have to collectively bargain with someone. Once you do, you end up contracts.
Seth, this is not a realistic proposition under Michigan's current athletic director.
No.
You know, Manuel has said stuff about how he doesn't want it to be transactional. He is not going to be the figure who, like, throws the doors open to unionization. He's just not.
So lose Ward.
So that's a nice, well.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. That's fine, too. But I mean, until that happens, I just don't see Michigan taking the lead in any way. Because there hasn't really been instance where I thought that Manuel has really shown leadership in a long time. Like, I know he's literally the head of the College Football Playoff Committee, which is sitting down right now and deciding to maybe go to 14 teams with multiple auto bids for conferences, which would be a disaster. And I just have
that's a whole separate. I didn't plan on going there, but why do you think that's a disaster?
It's insane because we know what an NCAA tournament looks like. We know what a college tournament looks like, and it's one auto bid per conference. I don't care how many teams you have. And it is ridiculous that, let's say, last year's Penn State team gets an auto bid with a completely hollow record. You need to be in a room and actually make some decisions. You got to choose teams. You don't just like put the Big Ten champion and the SEC champion as automatic buys. That is consolidating power in a way that is disgusting.
See, I think the 14-team proposal was, I don't know this, but I suspect that that was the ACC and the Big 12 and the Group of Five, their reaction to the what is inevitably going to happen or maybe already is happening, the Big 10 and the SEC saying, look, this 12-team playoff format that we have right now, guess what? In a couple of years, the money breakdown is going to have to change. You know, our representation in this, our stake in this, our piece of the pie is going to have to be bigger. And these other leagues really don't have a choice because the Big Ten and the SEC can go do their own thing. So they say, okay, well, if we give you what you want, can we get two extra teams in or two All extra right. spots in so we can maybe have a still have the same kind of opportunity for our leagues to be relevant in the playoff?
Well, I know that the ACC and Big 12 didn't propose that they would never get a bye. That's not their proposal. And to me, there's more than leadership than merely revenue extraction, because that's how you get Boeing, right? That's revenue extraction, particularly for the people in charge. And that's what I feel like this playoff, I mean, the Big 10 expansion, the SEC expansion, they make no sense in the context of competition. They make no sense in the context of the history of the sport. They destroyed the Pac-12 to line their own pockets. That's not leadership. That is the opposite of leadership. And just because other industries are doing the same thing doesn't mean it's right in college football either. So sometimes leadership is not taking every single penny you can come across.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you that wasn't going to lead the way. I think it's going to continue to lead the way. And I think one of the reasons why, to get back to the discussion about players getting paid, I think, and this is something that Sankey, when he brought, you know, before Oklahoma and Texas were official, I remember hearing some SEC guys kind of talking about the vision that Sankey had was growing the coffers in the SEC so that when the inevitable happened and you revenue share, let's say you're getting $60, $70 million a team, when you grow that to, you know, nine digits, when you get to the point where you have to share that revenue with players, okay, well, now you're back to that baseline that you had just reached of $60 or $70 million a team. That's probably what that number is going to be long-term, because you're probably going to have to pay the players $30 or $40 million, whatever it is, kind of growing the money enough so you aren't losing ground from where you are currently. I think that's what they say the thought process is. Now, is that really their thought process? I don't know, but that's what they say.
I mean, the reason that athletic departments are the way they are now is because they were sitting on a geyser of money and had no labor costs. So they're ridiculously bloated. Like, the number of people in an athletic department could probably be halved. Like, they're protecting the administrator class, which is happening at universities all across the country in all departments, not just sports. So I understand that the administrator class is looking out for their butts, but I don't care about them. let's be very clear. Anyone who's an administrator at a college is expendable. Teachers are not expendable. Administrators are expendable.
I gotcha. Well, hey, man, I said it was time to tamper a couple weeks ago. I'm saying it's time to play the game. It's time to get the collectives in on recruits, and especially that one down the road. Because I'm not bringing this. Let me just put it this way. I'm not just bringing this up randomly.
Okay, I know you don't do that, so this is a very interesting conversation.
We know, yeah.
Because, I mean, this feels like, you know, Sherrod Morris hired as the head coach at the University of Michigan, and all of a sudden, they've got Sean McGee in, and they have someone in charge of NIL. And I think we've mentioned this on this hour a couple weeks ago, but Jim Harbaugh had an awful lot of strengths, but he was not, I don't know, 37 years old. You know, he was more attached to the older model of college football, and there seems to be an awful lot of action on that front that wasn't happening under Harbaugh. So it feels like Michigan should be moving in this direction, and they have a head coach that believes that. The problem for Sherrod Moore is now he's got to convince everybody else at the university. You know, I think Santa Ono is probably going to be down with it. But as mentioned, you know, Ward Manuel was talking about transactional, whatever, and that's a bad look.
Yeah, I didn't listen. I didn't agree with that then. I didn't agree with it when
right.
He said it but initially. I didn't agree with it when Jim said it. I still don't agree with it.
When you have this donor class that is Michigan-ish, right? And they think, oh, well, you know, this is bad. This NIL stuff, we don't like it. Well, it goes against the tradition of college football. You need someone to move their opinions. And I think Sherrod Moore is going to attempt that. And it would help a lot if his athletic director was doing the same thing.
I gotcha. All right. So you've had some time. Well, you still have some more time to chew on your homework. I remember back in, was it 2019 when we were talking about who was going to replace B-line? I can't remember. One of you guys had Steve Prime. That's the only reason why I brought up Steve Prime. One of you guys.
I thought Prom, yeah, he was coming off like three top 20 seasons at Ken Pom and seemed like a reasonable option. But, you know,
it seemed like we were generally okay with Jawan. I was fine with Jawan.
No, I used him as a fill in for the topic. Okay, so who's your Steve Prom this time? Assuming for the sake of argument that this end of season meeting happens and he's like, hey man, this dude Jawan, he doesn't get it. You know, he's not telling me what I want to hear. I gotta go find me another coach, which is possible. Who would your guy be? So we're going to talk about who our guys are. On the other side, I have mine. I want to hear you. I've seen some names in the chat here as well that we can discuss as well. Who would your guy be to run the Michigan basketball program? Who would excite you, or who would you think would do a good job? And are those the same thing? All right, let's get to a break. We'll pick that up on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
Clear on the radio.
All right. So chat folks, Keon Sab, if he had stayed at Michigan, and I know people at Alabama, and I talk directly to the Sabs. Now, can I say that I've seen what the collective actually put in front of him? No, but what I'm telling you is I heard from sources down there, sources here, that he didn't leave for money. And I talked to his dad. I've been talking to his dad going back to right after. His thing was about the rotation. He did not leave Michigan for money. He could have had a Mercedes-Benz. That same picture that you just saw him take at Alabama. I don't know who this dude is in the chat who thinks, oh, well, he took a picture with a Benz, so he left for the money. Man, Michigan dudes take pictures with cars too. I kept seeing pictures of Blake Corum with big, you know, big time cars over the years. I mean, come on, man. That he would have had a big time deal to stay here at Michigan. But you know what he wouldn't have had? He wouldn't have had a enough of a of a of an assurance that there wouldn't be a rotation at safety for his liking. It was something he had talked about with Jesse, and Jesse was kind of telling him, look, we can play all of you guys. You know, we can, one of you guys can play nickel. Who's going to play nickel? Well, you know, getting comfortable with that. And then Jesse leaves and Wink comes in and he met with me. He met with Wink, and Wink kind of talked to him about, look, this is what I'm going to do. But he doesn't know Wink. Now, you might say he doesn't know the guys down at Alabama either, but he knows Courtney, right? He knows Courtney, trusts Courtney, knows that their safety depth chart, at least as far as the starters are concerned, is a lot different than the one in Michigan where you're bringing two safeties back. So I'm telling you, I'm not guessing on this. Like, people think I guess on some of this. I'm not even giving you an opinion. Now, they could not be telling me the truth. I can leave room for that. But I'm very consistently, the conversation was, I don't want to be a part of a rotation. Now, we can debate whether he really would have been a part of a rotation, right? I think one of those guys would have played nickel. And I don't even think it's a bad thing to have a safety rotation, frankly. But what makes sense to me is not important. It's about what makes sense to him. Yeah. What made sense to him was, I can go to Alabama. I've got to compete. But the idea or the likelihood of being a starter down there seems clearer to me. And I can have good NIL down there, too. I'm going to go.
That's, you know, it seems a little wacky to me, because is it a bad thing for Mason Graham to have a rotation at defensive tackle? Is that a bad thing for him, or is it a good thing? I think it's probably a good thing. It's probably less likely he gets hurt.
So I think, there's a lot to it. And I try to say this all the time, man. Mm-hmm. You know, what I would do and what I would do doesn't even matter. It's how they see it.
Yeah.
Right. And how he saw it was, I started to start the season when Rob Moore was out. Rod comes back, I play some, and then Quentin Johnson starts playing. And then how many snaps did he play in a Rose Bowl? Like six? I'm not saying this is a criticism. I'm just giving you his perspective. Like,
back on radio in 30 seconds, guys.
And so what is this going to look like if I come back? Right. And you know what, if Quentin Johnson, you know, might be something happening there. What if, I think all of that was at play.
I just find it so uninteresting. Oh. Like, is there another circumstance where you're going to lose a guy like Kian Sab like that? Like, no. It was a weird situation.
And it was one guy. It's, I mean, come on, man.
I mean, and he went to Alabama. Okay.
Yeah.
That's, I mean.
So, fellas, there is an overwhelming sentiment among Michigan fans. Hey, let's change the head basketball coach. Let's fire Juwan. Let's move on. I think that's a possibility. I don't think it's the biggest possibility. I think it's more likely than not that if it's Ward Manuel making the decision that he'll be back. Now, you know, remains to be seen how that's gonna play out, but it is a possibility that they move on. If that happens, who would you want it to be? We all have our guys. I think we've thought enough about this. So let's start with you, Brian. If you could pick the next basketball coach of the University of Michigan, who would you pick?
Well, there's no one out there who's like a slam dunk who's obviously gettable at this point. But, you know, for me, I'm looking at Greg McDermott at Creighton, who might be not gettable, but Juwan Howard is making about twice what he does. So Michigan could knock on his door. I'm sure many doors have been knocked on. so that's kind of a pie in the sky. Same with Shaka Smart. Like, he just went to Marquette, a guy who still young. And has a pretty long track record of being a good coach. But other than that, it's like, do we want to go back to the Iowa State? Well, because Steve Prohm fell off a cliff. And after three top 20 KenPom seasons in 4 years, went 0-18. So Iowa State turns to TJ Otzelberger. And
Ira said this name was going to come up.
Well, so the one thing that I, you know, when Michigan was hiring Beilein, I went and I looked at KenPom and I was like, so what is the consistent thing that he is putting out? And for like 10 straight years as a head coach, they were top 10 in turnover rate. So you're looking at Beilein and you're like, that's baked in. We know that's happening. We're going to have a very low turnover rate with Beilein, and that's something to start from. Now, Otzelberger, 3 years at Iowa State, KenPom defensive efficiency 5-8-2. So that really feels like maybe something you can bank on. Now, that didn't happen at UNLV. It didn't happen at South Dakota State, his other two stops. But 3 years as a high major, three top 10 defenses seems pretty good to me. Now, the problem with Otzelberger is that he is like an Iowa State lifer, a guy who came up in the program, might not be achievable. I know that's kind of weird to say about a guy at Iowa State, but you know, sometimes guys choose security over swinging for the fences. So the other guy who kind of appeals is Mark Pope at BYU. So he's been at BYU for 5 years. He started off pretty well with a couple of top 20 teams, fell off a little bit the last two, but now he's back with a top 20 BYU team. They're 9-8 in the Big 12. That is really impressive for BYU, their first season as a high major. And again, it looks like one thing you can probably bank on with him is shooting efficiency, particularly from two. And I think that's a really encouraging sign, because that's not a lot of variance. That's something where if you can do that, you're probably a pretty good coach.
All right. Yeah. Otzelberger was definitely, I recall it that one to a T. Craig Ross, you got a guy?
I've got several. In basketball in particular, I hate to make judgments without seeing things live. And the best coach team I've seen this year live, McNeese State. And that is, unfortunately, Will Wade. And I don't think Will Wade is possible for Michigan. I've seen his teams at LSU and when they played in Maui against Michigan, and they were really well coached. I mean, that guy, for all of his other problems, can coach. And McNeese, I think, is what, 24-3 this year. It wouldn't stun me if they make some noise in the.
Well, they're going to be able to score. You know that a Will Wade team is going to be able to score for sure.
Yeah, he's going to roll the ball out for the guy he bought for $2 million.
Right, but
how is that going to work at Michigan? Yeah,
I'm not saying it'll work. I'm just telling you what.
Did you see the LSU offense when Michigan played them? They did not play basketball.
They won.
You just said you didn't want Texas A&M. Will Wade's going to give you Texas A&M.
That's what I said the problem was. That's what I said there was a problem. But that was the best team I've seen this year.
I mean, you literally went to the last guy Michigan would hire.
But let me give you my real choice. I mean, I sort of started at the same spot as Brian did and looked at, well, what sort of characteristic of his team has been consistent and good. And you have to start with Otzelberger because of his defenses. They've been very, very good. It's sort of weird. Maybe Iowa State owes us one, or maybe not, when they took Johnny Orr, when Canham, who was too cheap to pay Johnny Orr. And Orr is certainly one of the best two coaches ever at Michigan. The other guy I like are Anthony Grant at Dayton. He's sort of the opposite of Otzelberger. He's an offensive guy. His team score points. They always seem to have a fun offensive team at the least. They are not great defensive teams usually, but they are really good offensive teams. He may be gettable. I assume that when you're talking Dayton, that's a guy you may be able to get. Also, two other guys. I noticed that South Carolina, when Frank Martin in his last year went into the complete tank, and they picked up a guy who I don't know, Lamont Paris, and he's turned that program around. They're 24-6 this year. I haven't seen them play but once, but you know, he's worth kicking the tires on. And the other one would be a James Madison, who has won, I think they're 28-3 this year. They were 22-11 last year after being terrible. And I don't know. I saw them beat Michigan State early in the season, and they looked really competent. And that guy, I think, is Mark Byington. So those are the people I would kick. No, I would not. I would not entertain Will Wade. But on the other hand, that McNeese team can really play. So,
all right. Seth,
that's my list.
All right, I got a couple of easy names, and then all right. So the pie in the sky, I'd kick the tires on Nate Oates, see if he's amenable. There's a different. The SEC and the Big Ten are still a little bit different, right? Even though the Big Ten is down right now, it'd be fun to kind of come up here. I think that he might find it easier to win in the Big Ten than the SEC, the way that the SEC is going. I check. I talk to Oates. But I got a cool name for you, Darian DeVries. So when Dana Altman was at Creighton, he had two assistants, Greg McDermott, who I agree with Brian, probably isn't going anywhere, but you got to try, right? The other guy he had was DeVries, who went to Drake and has been killing it. I think he's like his worst season there is like 24 wins. And his teams always rebound. You use the two-point metric. His teams are always actually really good at two-point. Now, they play in the MVC, so it's hard to – but, like, if you're going down to – you know, you're going down a league, you want to go see who's out there. Plus, I kind of like the idea – and Fred Hoiberg is another name out there that I kind of like, too. I kind of like the idea of someone who knows how to recruit areas that don't get very scouted because – things are, you know, basketball, everyone's getting swooped up. Everyone's going to, like, the same five programs, and it's the same, like, you know, that you're sitting next to Duke and North Carolina to fight for everybody that you want. And they're still finding guys in places that don't really send everybody into the AAU system and send them, like, when they're eighth graders, right? And the Midwest is really kind of like the last spot in America where you're finding basketball talent that you just really can just go and find basketball talent. Indiana's still full of it. North Carolina's still full of it just because those are basketball states. But DeVries knows where all those guys are, and I think, you know, that'd be an interesting guy to look up. Plus, if you look at his Wikipedia page, there's no scandal section. Unlike some of the options that you guys put out there.
I mean, I'm curious, Seth, because first of all, full disclosure, I know Nate. I know Nate well. I've been knowing him for 20 years. He is my guy. There was a time where I thought that Nate was going to be, like, if something happened, you know, when it was looking like maybe Juwan was going to go, like, remember the Lakers were coming after him that time. I was like, it's Nate. Like, and you can get, I think they could get Nate. But he's had a lot of success at Alabama. They surprisingly, he gets basketball support at Alabama. You might think they write basketball support at Alabama, but he's able to get done what he needs to get done at Alabama. And then you have the other thing. So you got the Brandon Miller. Now, Brandon Miller wound up never getting charged, but the other dude did, Darius Miles, with the murder. Now, it's not like he tried to cover things up or anything like that, but he had two players on his team where there was, you know, that were in proximity to a murder. All right. Then if you get past that, if you say that has nothing to do, you also have the incident this year, which I don't think was a huge deal, but he put his hand on a player on the court, right? And so I'm curious how you think that would go over here at Michigan, his candidacy, because as a pure basketball coach, they're going to defend. He has teams that are always going to shoot it well, but they're going to pound you inside and they're going to defend, and Nate can recruit. And Nate it's not like he hasn't been able to toil. Yeah. He got handed a really good situation at Buffalo from Bob Hurley, but man, he really took it and ran with it. And he's doing things at Bama that they haven't seen done down there, including recruit at a very high level. So I like Nate on the merits of his coaching ability. I just can't see us. I can't see a scenario where Michigan will look past all of that to really seriously consider hiring a Nate Oates.
I mean, I don't think any of those incidents really climbed to the level of punched a coach in the face on the court at Michigan.
Well, so like the details of the murder are kind of important.
Yeah.
I mean, like the incident with the Missouri player was pretty much nothing. Like the guy's getting in the face of one of his players and he's like, go back to your bench, get out of here.
I agree.
That one, that does not move the needle for me. That is nowhere. Okay. Like, he gets a bit of a reprimand, but he's just pushing guys back to the bench. He's not hitting anybody. He shouldn't have done it, to be clear, but it's not something where you're like, this guy's got anger issues, right? It's just, you know, pushing a guy away from a potential fight that was brewing. It's fine. The murder thing is kind of a big deal. And
all right,
Michigan, if they were going to try to hire Oates, would have to go over that with a fine tooth comb. And I don't know if he did anything wrong. It doesn't seem like it.
There was some criticism that he didn't sit Brandon Miller out for It's an extended period of time. There was some criticism about that. Now, he was never charged with a crime, right? So, yeah. I mean, like
Brian said, you'd have to know the details. Michigan would have to do their homework and have an answer, but it doesn't seem automatically disqualifying. And given the level of basketball coach he is, it certainly, you know, you have to weigh if you want to go for a home run hire, if you really want to, you know, knock it out of the park, that's really, as far as guys that Michigan could potentially get, like, that's where you start. Okay. I'm not saying they can do it.
What do you guys, we only got like 60 seconds. So what do you guys think of Dusty May? You don't like Dusty May?
I mean, he caught fire with this group. He kept them together after this last offseason. So that's impressive. But he's only been at Florida Atlantic. He had a really good year last year. He's like 40th in KenPom this year with the same core. I would like to see a little bit more of a track record.
Yeah, I think Dusty can recruit. His teams are going to get
it. I mean, this.
Oh, okay, all right. I got you. Iris, we got to go. We got to go. This is not the last time we'll have this topic, I'm sure.
Yeah, well.
So we will get back into it at another time. Until then, folks, thanks for another spirited MGo Blog Roundtable. And be sure to tune in tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of the University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.